Go podcast 10.21. Stay for the reveal. Which Big Ten analyst seems like a weird indie superstar? All right, it feels much better to not lose to Wisconsin than to lose to Wisconsin. But it doesn't feel good. Like, I said a couple of things during the game, during the phase where Michigan was like 0-9 from 3.
Which was like all the game?
Well, it was the second half. And then, you know, like, Trice hit one off the dribble, and I might have exclaimed something that my son repeated to my wife repeatedly this morning. Much to her surprise, because she was out of the house when this was happening. So, Wisconsin is just like, come on, man.
So, your son now knows the word flop? Or other words that begin with F?
Yes. Yes.
Flip.
We're trying to like be like, those are daddy's sports words and have no meaning outside.
You flubbed that call, sir.
I did. Let me break in here. We'd like to thank our sponsors, which are Underground Printing, The Bow Store, Peak Wealth Management, Homeshare Lending, the University of Michigan Alumni Association, The Residence Inn, Ann Arbor Downtown, Ann Arbor Elder Law, Human Element, Michigan Law Grad, Lantana Hummets, and the Phil Klein Insurance Group. Why do you have the phone up?
Because you get 5 minutes to talk about
your
main point.
Come on. All right, fine. So, in the first half of this game, how many fouls did Ethan Happ commit?
That I saw or that he was called for? Because those are very different numbers. In the first half, 6.
So, and it just drives me crazy that this guy gets, like, the Backstreet Boys free pass where it's like, yeah, you got a blood alcohol level of 35, but you're famous. It's all right.
Our cameraman, who is sitting on the floor looking through a camera, was able to catch a foul before the referees of this game were able to catch a foul.
Which is like Hap like grabbing Teske's arm as he tries to like put in an offensive rebound.
Right.
So like not subtle, not like, oh, I guess I can see how they could have missed that. And then I think it's Livers has a transition opportunity and Hap hacks across both of his arms and knocks it out of bounds and like knocks Livers to the ground. And nope, that one's cool too. It's just like, I cannot believe this stuff.
Someone tweeted at me that the head of officials for the Big Ten was in the building for this well.
The national head of officials.
National?
Was in the building. And
is there like some secret cabal of referees let's help Wisconsin?
They did put like a kind of unnecessary loose ball foul on him later. And did put him out with 3 fouls pretty quickly. Although
that was big. When he's had to sit down for a while, that was big.
Well, and that's what's so frustrating about the fact that they didn't call 2 super obvious fouls. And in the aftermath of John Teske getting run out of the Iowa game by committing like 2 fouls, right?
Yeah.
And he fouls out in 13 minutes. It's just, it drives me crazy.
It's weird that it happened at home too. Like, I understand the Troll Center. When you go on the road in the Big Ten, you know, it's not Craig Ross era anymore, but it's still, that's going to happen on the road. But like that it happened at home, that we're watching a ref show in Chrysler.
Well, it's a weird kind of ref show because it's Wisconsin-Michigan, so neither team gets in the bonus. I think the whole game was there? I don't know if anybody was in the bonus the whole game.
I think dressed right at the end when we got the foul time.
And mostly that's legit, but when there's a foul, you got to call a foul, especially when it's on like the whole team.
Right.
And I feel like refs know that he's the whole team.
Right.
And they don't want to change the game. But it's
people
like,
are going to turn off the TV and after halftime if Hap is out of the game.
Yeah. I don't know. It gets to me, man. But one weird thing that Wisconsin has done this year is they've turned off charges in the Big Ten. Like, if you go to the... I've noticed this watching other games. Like, the Bruno Fernando one, I guess, like, was it Rutgers or something? No, it was against Nebraska, where he, like, lowers his shoulder, knocks a dude over, like, legitimately, and then goes and dunks, and then there's, like, a big controversy because he, like, almost, like, steps on the guy. That's a charge. Like, that's... Sometimes there are charges.
Well, and you saw the Jordan Murphy thing, too, is like something we've talked about numerous times on the podcast.
What I'm saying is people are setting up to like take charges and take what look to be legitimate charges, and they're just not getting called anymore, like league-wide.
Unless you launch yourself from your heels after minimal contact.
Well, I mean, Wisconsin didn't get any calls in this game. They got zero charge calls.
Yeah.
And they tried, but they got, like, Davidson got a
ball. No, they got one.
They got one?
They got one. They waved off the Charles Matthews dunk.
Oh, my God. That's right. Oh, my God.
Because that one was... It took no one... I think the referees on TV, they wanted to count the
bucket, and then they decided not to count the bucket, and it's just...
Right, and it should have been an and one, because he got fouled on his way up, too. So it was like it could have been a three-point swing on that. It was ridiculous.
They got the one, but then they didn't get anything else. And some of those were like Iverson had his feet in the restricted circle and stuff. But the thing that I've been like wondering for years is like, where is your dignity? I think they're just not calling charges on that stuff.
All right.
And it had to come down from like, what? Do you want me to stop talking?
5 minutes
of
Brian's first five.
We've now moved on to like block charge, which is a different...
Oh, so you started talking about fouls.
The half
and now
stuff.
You've moved on to fouls?
Well, it's interesting that the standard for what a charge is in the league has radically changed in about 2 months.
All right.
And it's all because of Brad Davidson.
That he's the instigator of all of this?
I can't imagine anything else. Like, he's nationwide famous for being the worst player in the country. Like, not worst player in the country, but, like, the scumbag Steve of college basketball. And they're not going to give him the calls that he's trying to draw. And, like...
Well, that's good.
It is good. Like, that kind of... Like,
we did get the one game right after he made a national video again of putting his foot under somebody. Because he did that to Jordan Murphy the week before us. Yeah. And, like... That like I'm surprised the Big Ten doesn't suspend a guy for that kind of thing.
What drives me crazy is people are characterizing it as an attempt to trip Jordan Murphy. Like, it wasn't an attempt to trip Jordan Murphy. It's to put him out for the season.
Yes.
Like, that's hopefully he lands on you and twists his ankle and sprains his ankle and then he's done for his career.
I mean, that's some Draymond Bowen stuff.
It is. And yeah, I mean, he didn't pull anything, although Hap did.
Like, oh, the clapping.
Well, he did that, and he also gave like Poole like a forearm shiver like late in the game.
What was? Wait, yeah, was that
Poole was also in Hap's face?
Well, no, he gave Brooks. He just scored on Brooks, and Brooks was not going to win that contest anyway. But he just scored on Brooks, and then turns around and like elbows him in the face, knocks him down, and then offers to help him up.
I don't think he saw him.
We're talking about different incidents. He knocks over Brooks, and that seemed like perfectly innocent.
Yeah.
But
they did a replay on that one. I didn't feel innocent.
The Z three-pointer he took after the offensive rebound. And after someone else gets the rebound, like, Hap swings his arm around it, like, chin level. And,
right.
Like, that's not an accident. I mean, come on, people.
Yeah.
And it's not an accident when Poole, because Poole did, like, kind of get up into him.
Yeah.
And there was just, like, where he wasn't doing anything that could possibly draw a technical foul, but he was clearly just not having any of Hap's shit.
Right.
And I think he deserved that call because he pissed the guy off so much that he took a swing at his face. I don't know. That's Wisconsin for you. They cheat the game.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's been known. It's nothing new.
Yeah. So, I guess we should talk about how Michigan won this game.
Oh, did they win it? I thought it was just
which
a rep
was show. Pretty much two guys.
Yeah.
John Teske.
Yeah.
Who... pretty much, well, not quite single-handedly, but pretty much single-handedly, held Hap to an 80 rating, his worst of the season. He was 9-19 from the floor. He had one assist.
In the second half. The first half, I thought Hap got the better of him.
Well, so, I think that John Teske is just, I cannot take a foul. And, like, so he's not going quite as all out as he might. He's just being very sure.
I mean, Hap finished really well around the rim. He had an array of different angles.
Hap is going to finish well around the rim no matter what.
Right, that's the point.
Pretty much all of those shots were like, I have to finish over someone.
Yeah.
Or I have to come up with like this kind of swooping like
but he had underhand. He had multiple of them.
Yeah, he did. But like, so I think part of it was just like, you know, sometimes Mike Watkins gets lucky, right? And Hap's not getting lucky. He's a really skilled player.
Right.
But like those shots weren't going to go down at 100% clip.
Well, no. And that's that's part of it is like that was their offense in the first half. Because if you look at how much other people scored, I think they had 27 points and he had 14 in the first half. Yeah. He shot at such a high percentage that he probably is not going to shoot, like you said, 75% both halves.
On those kinds of shots, Hap has always had a ridiculously high percentage.
Well, I mean,
Ant made a great.
He shoots 58% from two.
Right? Yeah.
I mean, he was 12 of 22 in the first game. So that's like, what, 55%?
Right.
Yep. And like, this is.
So the point is that that was okay. He won that first half, but you stick with it because Teskys are very good defenders, we all know. And then you don't allow Hap to have a lot of assists and engage the rest of the team, getting right. three-pointers going and everything. So make him go, you know, 10 of 14. Make him go.
They did dig on him a little bit late in the first half, like just two or three times. Just
yeah, what Wisconsin did to like clear to get him off of him is they just cleared out that entire side, isolated him over there so he could back down and go into the post. But that like condenses everybody else around, so then there's not a whole lot of guys to shoot to throw to afterwards.
Well, yeah, and if you're Ethan Happ, like, and you have 58% usage in this game, which is what he does, like, you're going to get tired. Like, that's a lot of work, bumping with Teskey and right. trying to get shots up. So, obviously, like, even though he was a little bit limited in terms of his playing time in this game, like, if you put 60% usage on a guy, you know, by the end of the game, he's going to be a little bit tired.
Right. And his break, too, was, like, right going into the half, so it was... He was playing so by the end of the game, he was dog tired.
I think even like the last 10 minutes of the first half, like he comes out and he's got like 10 points in the first 4 minutes or something.
Mm-hmm.
And then he's got like four the rest of the half.
Yeah, he started like 5 or 6.
Yeah.
And then he kind of failed.
And he's 7 of 10 at the half. So Michigan was able to dig on a little bit, get him to give the ball up and get other people to take shots. And then he just wasn't quite up for it just physically.
And the key was not allowing everybody else to engage and go and score efficiently.
Right. I mean,
by forcing Hap to be, because he killed us in the first game because not only did he score, but he had like 7 assists. So he moved the ball and distributed it after the doubles.
He assisted on half of non-Hap baskets in the first game.
Right.
And this game, Wisconsin had 5 assists total. So like, yeah.
And like one to half. So,
right. So one of the differences from Wisconsin this game is last game they had Kobe King in there for 30 minutes. And this game they went with Khalil Arbison, who's like the defensive junker. And he was awful offensively. Anytime he touched the ball, Michigan was like, yeah, go ahead, take your shot.
Yeah.
And Kobe King, I mean, he didn't finish efficiently this one, but he missed an open three. And
I mean, King is like, he had a...
He's a shooter.
He had a couple threes against Michigan in the first one, but he's not a guy who I think is going to shoulder the offensive load.
No, but I think he is a guy that Michigan could sag off of Iverson,
but they
and created but, some inefficient
but they didn't
offense
really,
there
because like Hap will give Iverson dunks if you
right.
So he's that good of a passer. So what Michigan? I mean, really in the second half it was just 1-on-1 with Teskey.
Yeah, and Teskey he blocked several of the shots. He affected a couple more,
and he was 2-9.
Hap missed a couple that you thought he probably was going to get.
Well,
late,
yeah,
but like you said, he was very tired.
There was one entry where he gets on X. He gets a, and then like X actually like put everything he had into two chest bumps, and Hap gave up the ball.
Yeah,
he got a standing ovation. X got a standing ovation for making him not go to the post there.
So Teskey is the reason, most of the reason that Wisconsin struggled to like 0.8 points per possession.
Right.
And then in the second half, Charles Matthews comes alive in a way which it's just like Michigan's up 5. There's like 30 seconds left. They're running the clock down and it's like, yes, this is going to be a hero ball shot from Matthews. And it goes down. It was just that kind of night for him.
His mid-range revenge.
I mean, it's long.
Because he hit about 3 to 4 mid-range shots.
I think
game.
He hit 4 or 5.
Yeah.
So like earlier in the
and
game,
none
they
of
had
them were like comfortable looks. It was all like there's a guy in his face and he's doing the fadeaway stuff.
Yeah, he backed down and then took that like Hakeem fadeaway on the baseline, and he had one fadeaway in the lane, and then he had a long two that was just a straight up jump shot.
Yeah, and then he was able to get to the bucket a couple of times.
Going right.
And also like set up Teske for an and one.
Oh, yeah.
So, I mean, this kind of reminded me of Charles in the tournament last year, where all of a sudden it was like, okay, his turnovers are not as much of an issue. He's able to generate good shots. And it just feels completely different. I don't know if it's going to stick around.
Yeah, I mean, it's been inconsistent, right? Like, if you look at his two-year career, year-and-a-half career, there he's had stretches where he's looked good, but he's also had stretches where he's just been the defensive stopper, and that's...
It'd be nice.
It was. I mean, in the it first, would be. In the first half, it was gone, and they were talking about how he was not himself, and he turned down that wide open three on that shoot around that ended up being a pool turnover.
Okay.
Like where they were just passing the ball around the perimeter and everyone was giving up, not taking 3-point shots. He gave up like the most obvious one, and Beeline like gave it to him afterwards, and like he was struggling the first half, and then like
shot
just kinda, like,
of
came
Beeline
out
on the sideline saying, "Take the fudging shot." Well, it was actually shoot the fudging ball.
Okay. Maybe you should say that when your son's around.
Yeah, well, so the thing about Beeline is he's a very nice person.
So he probably did use a Denard-appropriate word?
I don't know. It's possible. I mean, it's possible that he was as frustrated as I was and said the exact same thing I did, but maybe he said fudging. I don't know.
So part of the reason that this was a close game, two things.
Oh, God.
One, they couldn't buy a three in the second half. Second half, our first half, I think they were like 4-7, which is fine. Second half, I think they were
0-9.
0-9, 0-10, yeah.
And
they were decent looks.
They were very good looks.
So, you know, what
like,
are you going
to do? For the most part, those were looks that I was like, yeah, you got to take that.
Mm-hmm.
What are you going to do? They either go down or they don't.
But the second thing is if you look at Iggy's stats, he is literally one for Wisconsin.
The one was nice.
It was nice.
One was nice.
Reverse layup.
Yeah, he took half from the perimeter and scored pretty easily, and I was like, yeah, okay, here we go.
Yeah.
And that was the last points he scored.
Well, it was the only. I mean,
he missed like a beautiful. He had a beautiful drive that like just bounced out off the rim.
Yeah.
And
then I thought like so he went. I think he missed the first shot of the game. Then he missed a three, and I think he made the third shot. And after his fourth one, he's like 1-4. And I thought he kind of pressed a little bit.
Well, I mean, the threes he was taking were like open threes in the context of the offense. So he's got to take those. He's a 40% three-point shooter.
Right.
Like, I don't think there's anything special Wisconsin juice that they did to make him miss those.
No.
Like, obviously, he was a little bit rattled in the first game. And it's just like, shots go down, shots don't go down.
It's just kind of crazy that both of his games against Wisconsin, it's like 1 of 14 from the field.
Yeah, especially because he's got a defensive mismatch.
Right.
And a guy who has to work so hard on the offensive end is like, what is going on? I started following this guy who's he's called Fifth Factor on Twitter, who does various visualizations of college basketball data. And Iggy is a trip, man. Because like half of Iggy's games is like, this is the best player in the country. Half of Iggy's games, this is the most miserable player in the country. So he's up and down and up and down and up and down.
So does that mean he's here next year?
I think so. I mean, if I'm an NBA team, I want to see him stop playing with his head down so much.
Like on his drives and stuff?
Yeah. Maybe just kind of establish himself as a more consistent performer. I mean, NBA is often all about potential, but like he's not a guy who – he's not like DJ, right, where it's like, okay, this is a guy who's 6'10 who can defend like four NBA positions. So for him, I think it's going to be more about an established level of production. So I think –
But he's not an athletic marvel. Like, he's athletic.
Well, he's a tough guy, but he's not.
But he's not, like, he's not Matthews, or he's not a guy who worms his way and contorts his body. Well, he's just fundamentally sound.
Beeline players have had such, like, wake-ups in late March or, like, there's...
Yeah, but for the NBA, I don't think, like, he doesn't pop off the screen as an NBA athlete, so he's really got to...
He's got to be a good shooter, which he is. He's got to be a try-hard defender. Which he generally is, we've talked about how good he is fundamentally around the rim, finishing, and an array of different shots.
But he's struggling in so many different games that I feel like I'm if I'm an NBA team, I'm
right.
I don't know, or hesitant.
Because I mean, we'll talk about the previous game later, but he was very efficient in that game,
right.
And this game was nowhere to be found.
Yeah, and so the guys who I follow, like the Draft Express guys and the Sam Vecenie from The Athletic, are kind of a little skeptical of him, and I think that's probably a fair representation of what the NBA thinks. Those guys, I mean, they talk to guys all the time, right? So, so I think that he would have to be like a guy who's like an established, like game in, game out killer before he would really get a first round look. I don't know.
Maybe or not. Michigan wins the national championship on his back, and
yeah, sure, we'll take that one too.
The other interesting thing, I thought Livers was really good in this game. He was efficient from the floor. He only took three shots, but he hit a three, had a drive, made a...
That drive was like something that kind of paid off. Like, he had a couple of drives like that earlier in the season where he just bricked a layup.
Yeah.
And it's, I mean, if he, like...
But he's mostly been a perimeter shooter, and he just put the ball on the floor and got right to the rim and had a nice layup.
Yeah, I think he's always going to be mostly just a shooter.
Right.
But, like, if he can...
But if you can do that...
If you can add a couple of those a game, yep. that's a big plus for your...
And he was solid defensively, I thought. He bodied up pretty well. He had a few rebounds, I think. Four rebounds.
And a block.
So,
well, he was the only person who drew Hap for any period of time, other than Teske. And Hap didn't really go off on him, so that was nice to see. I feel like Livers is maybe a year away from being a 20% usage guy who's very flexible. If he can just kind of make those drives to the bucket a few times a game, maybe pass out of them.
Well, and he'll take some of the scoring burden away when somebody has a bad game, when he shoots like that, because he can add it. He doesn't need to get 15 or 20 points, but when he adds 8, 10 points every now and then on a couple made threes or a take to the basket, like, you can have a guy like Matthews or Poole just have an off night, because it kind of counterbalances with Iggy chipping in whatever they are kind of giving a drought, I guess. But
yeah. I wanted to go back to the Matthews dunk, which we didn't mention.
Okay.
So earlier in the game, Brooks is in, and they're able to slip it to Teske and get him an and one at the bucket. You remember that assist?
Yes.
Yeah.
So that played off that, because Teske again slipped. Rovers went with him. And then Teske had one of his patented, okay, rescreen. So he screens Rovers out of the way, and then there's the Red Sea for Matthews.
Yeah.
So, like, we haven't really talked about the rescreen from Teske, because it hasn't really happened very much in the past month or two, but that was a nice kind of like, oh, right, this happens.
Well, I mean, that's just another, like, piece in the Teske arsenal, where he does so many things. And that's as cerebral of a thing as anything else, right? Because you set a pick and then you roll, oh, that didn't work. Okay, we need to redo that, or get a guy on a different side, however you want to approach it. But
well, then the other thing that kind of popped out to me on a rewatch was Michigan ran a pick and roll with him and Poole, and Poole pulled up and canned a three just off the dribble off the drop.
Yep.
And I'm like, okay, can we do some more of that? Because if you're going to cover Michigan like that, like, it's tough. I mean, we saw Michigan have one of their worst offensive performances of the season against Wisconsin the first time, and I'd like to see Poole have that option more often, because, like, he's our best pull-up shooter, there's no question about that.
Yep.
And just if he's able to, like, hit one, then they got to come out and hedge on him, and then you're in a good situation to pass out of that and get people attacking downhill.
And he's able to get to the basket as well. I mean, he had a couple nice finishes.
Sometimes, I mean, he's had some here and there, but not consistently.
Okay.
Right? Like, he had
But I think the point of what I'm making is, like, he has the ability to dribble the ball and not always turn it over. He can get into the lane. He can beat a guy. Like, we've seen him capable of that. It's something that he can grow on this summer, hopefully, and come back and perfect it next year.
He's a more willing passer than, like, Iggy or Matthews.
Yeah.
His passes don't always go well.
And, though, like, one of his turnovers today was the one where he is kind of running a break and Matthews is cutting in from the corner, and he tried to slip a pass through there. And I actually thought that was a good pass, and the guy made a good defensive play to knock it away. But it's cool to see him see those things and try them.
That didn't really bother me either. I was like, all right, well,
the guy made a good defensive play. Yeah. But, I mean, if that gets through, it's a dunk.
Yeah, I just mean the accuracy of his passes are not always great.
Yeah. It's going to be interesting to see what Wisconsin's like next year, because every single one of their shot generators is out the door. I mean, they're probably not going to be as bad as I want them to be.
Reuver's just going to be at the five.
They never are.
They'll be
right?
Five out team.
He's a player. Like he's going to be good for them. But like they have nobody to generate shots.
Yeah.
I mean maybe Davidson. I mean Davidson's like less than 50% at the rim though.
They still don't have a point guard.
No.
And they don't have a point guard coming in or in the system or anything either.
Well, I mean sometimes guys develop into point guards later in their career.
And the way that it goes, I'm sure Wisconsin will find one.
We'll see. I mean, they're going to have to scramble. I don't know if there's ever been a team in the Big Ten that's had to change so radically.
So the interesting thing that I didn't mention, I didn't pick this up until late, is Wisconsin went the final 4 minutes without really scoring.
Yeah.
Like, it was a one-point game, and Happ makes a layup, and it's about 4:20 to go.
Well, if Happ's not scoring, who's scoring for him?
But I mean, no, clearly no one, not even Happ then. So for the last 4 minutes of the game, they get no points until, like, a layup with 8 seconds left that Michigan's just playing off.
Yeah.
But, I mean, that's how Michigan wins games. Is like they. I mean, that's literally choking the life out of somebody.
I put it in the preview. It's like you single up Happ and let Teske go to work and then cover everybody else and you win by scoring a point per possession. Michigan won by scoring
1.02.
There you go.
You and Tony Romo.
All right. That 0-2 is huge, man.
We're going to take a break, come back, talk about Rutgers. They get an S.
Let me just tell you a couple things to keep in your mind while you're out there. When we take the field, we're going to win. We've got big goals. We've got big ideas. We've got to win this game, and there is no game on the remainder of our schedule more important than the one you're going down to the tunnel to play today. Now let's go. Let's go.
Underground Printing is proud to present the Bow Store. Visit us at our new location at 333 South Main or online at www.bow.team.
It's painless, it's online, it's group ordering made easy for your next custom printed apparel order. Pogo from Underground Printing takes the aggravation out of custom printing for a group. Whether you're selling shirts for a fundraiser, organizing a large event, or trying to collect sizes and payment for a family reunion, Underground Printing is here to help. Save time and hassle every step of the way with our easy-to-use site. No more guessing what to order, chasing people down to pay, or wasting time trying to sort out who needs what. We'll set it up and you can just sit back and relax. We can even take care of individual shipping. To learn more about Pogo, visit us at any of our convenient locations or at pogo.undergroundshirts.com.
Is your online store sluggish, outdated, underperforming? You may be suffering from chronic crappy website disorder. 1 in 3 online stores built by your brother's friend's nephew currently suffers from chronic crappy website. But now, there's hope. Introducing Human Element. Huel has helped hundreds suffering from CCW to turn their online stores around, creating fast, secure, and engaging online experiences that turn visitors into customers and put products back at the top of their search engine game.
Before Huel, I had abandoned carts, browser errors, and poorly animated GIFs. Now, with Huel, I can focus on what I'm actually good at, running my business.
Jeffrey, would you be a deer and pull the Ferrari around?
Side effects may include increased traffic, customer conversions, better ROI, compliments, elation, and early retirement. Why live with the disappointment of chronic crappy website disorder? Speak to your Human Element consultant today to see if Huel is right for you.
The places you'll go may seem far from Ann Arbor. From San Francisco to St. Louis to Shanghai. But as members of the Alumni Association, we're never far. Because Michigan is more than a place. It's a mindset that connects us. For those who leave Michigan, but for whom Michigan never leaves, this is where you belong. The Alumni Association of the University of Michigan. Join today at umalumni.com.
Hey, so I have, like, insurance and stuff, but I don't really, like, know what's going on with it.
Yeah, your coverage probably sucks, and you're paying way too much for it. And I know this because I had a guy, his name's Phil Klein. He's actually a Michigan alum and wrestled for Michigan. He okay. looked at my insurance, and he was like, yeah, your coverage sucks, and you're paying a lot more than you need to for it.
I also, like, I hesitate to even mention this, but I do have my insurance from a company that advertises during college football games. Well, and I wish that was not the case.
Well, why don't you just get it from a cool guy who actually, like, reads MGo Blog?
Well, how would I do that? They have a website?
They have one of those too. It's philklineinsurance.com. Can you remember the name Phil Klein?
Sure.
Can you remember insurance?
Yes.
Okay. Use those two together and you will save money on your insurance and you will actually get better coverage on your home and your auto, and they do life too.
All right. So you're telling me if I Google Phil Klein Insurance, this website will come up?
Yes.
Wonders never cease. So Records doesn't suck. It's really jarring.
They're just kind of okay?
I mean, they're not okay. They're bad. But they don't suck. Remember like the game like 2 years ago?
When they had one assist?
Yeah, and like every shot was just like...
It's hard to forget that one, yeah.
It just goes like off the backboard so hard it's hard to rebound. And it was just like comical and sad.
The only things that were going in were like off rebound, rim... Yeah, off someone's head and then goes back. Yeah.
It was like a Noah Baumbach movie of a basketball team.
That game was so annoying because like they were so bad and they were staying like within shouting distance because Michigan couldn't score and they kept on putting in horrible shots.
So that didn't happen in this game. Like I didn't think Rutgers made an inordinate number of like makes after which I roll my eyes. Like Dorson had the one early where he like threw a hook shot basically at the rim.
Right.
And it bounced. It was the whole line drive that went in.
It's one, but like that, there's like, one at least in every game.
Right, yeah. It happens to you. It happens for you. It's one of those things that happens in basketball games. But it wasn't like all of their points.
Right.
And they're still not good.
No.
But they are a basketball team now.
Well, they were good last year. They were decent last year at defense.
Right.
And they've gotten a year better with a couple better athletes.
I mean, like there's a couple of guys on their team that I would take. Like I would take Baker and I would take Omarude.
Yeah.
Like those guys would help Michigan.
And he played with Iggy, right?
Yeah, apparently like they were bros on Orange.
I would take some of their center depth too.
I'm sure. Okay.
Just take anyone.
Just pick a Star Wars character and put him.
But like, you know, in a context where Geo Baker doesn't have to take all of his shots contested off the dribble, he's probably a pretty good shooter. In this game,
and he's long enough.
73 O rating.
Not so much. 1-9. Every single one of those shots was brutal. I mean, this is what
he was taking a million 3-pointers like
off the dribble, at
the end of the shot clock.
I wish people tracked like step backs. And I wonder if he would have the highest percentage of step backs in the country. Like, because he just gets stuck with all their terrible shots. And he makes a pretty good number of them, considering the average shot quality he gets. But Michigan harassed him in ways that even he could not overcome. So Matthews, I think, was the main matchup because he's 6'4".
Yeah.
And just turned him off. And that's something that, I mean, we see Matthews do regularly, but... it's extremely consistent.
And when you have two guys that you can alternate on somebody that give, especially when you don't have a ton of other offensive creators,
right,
then like, they're always going to get 100% of a really good
like
defender.
If you can flip Simpson and Matthews onto one guy so that they're kind of standing in the corner for half the defensive possessions.
Right.
I'm kind of hoping Michigan can do that to State. Like, can just kind of switch him up on Winston and just put him in their pocket.
Just like alternate on as to who has more energy at that point.
Well, one thing about this game, and it's going to be relevant for Michigan State too, is they foul a lot. And Michigan was, and this is continued, I'm afraid to even mention it because I don't want to touch it and like hurt it. Or they were 14-17 on their free throws in this game.
And they were 7-9 against Wisconsin too.
And that's, but in this game particularly, well, that's why Matthews, this game did not feel
Z
like.
Z and Matthews were 9-12. So, and like the thing is like Z hasn't had very many free throws at all this year. So he's now up to like a 63% shooter and Matthews is in the same area. And that's not great. But that's an entirely different ball game,
than like 48 or whatever they were.
I mean, really, because if you send them to the line and they're a 63% shooter, like the expected return on that is like 1.2, 1.3 points per possession, which is good.
Yep.
Yeah.
So you can't foul them willy nilly.
Yeah, I mean, remember last year where they had like hack a Z right for a while, or hack a Matthews.
I think Rutgers tried it a couple times in this game, didn't they? Like one in the second half.
Yeah,
they sent Z to the line intentionally when they were in the line of one,
and he made
two.
Yeah,
so it was throughout the game. Like the free throws were the reason why. I mean, this game could have gotten up to a 20-point lead at the beginning, but then it just got kind of like tight. But it still kept like it was like Michigan had their hand on their face, and they were just kind of
it was basically a 10-point game the whole game,
right?
Kind of like the Illinois game where it was just like constantly a 10-point margin.
And it would slip below to like 9, but then Michigan would make a bucket or two, and it'd be back to 13.
Yeah, and I mean that's fine. Like, I think they actually beat the KenPom spread in this game or matched it.
They did. I think it was supposed to be 10. So
was it 10? So yeah, they barely missed it.
It's the Big Ten road game. So
yeah, because they hit a 3 at the end.
Oh, that's right.
It was like 15.
To be fair, Michigan had just done the same thing. Like I think. Livers hit a 3 with
right at the end.
Yeah, time.
Yeah. Okay. So I guess that's
so we kind of talked about how Iggy's been wild and up and down, and this was an up game.
And this was and this is another one of those games where you know people talk about being like efficient and just letting the game come to you, and that's kind of what he did. And he I think he picked up steam as the game went on, but was just the guy with the open shots, so he would make it. He wasn't forcing anything like we talked about a little bit against Wisconsin. Maybe started forcing it, trying to get in rhythm. But this one, it just kind of flowed naturally, I thought.
Well, and Michigan was running a lot of pick and roll with him and Simpson. So Omarui is 6'7", but he's 240. He's kind of a more traditional power forward. So he's got some range on offense, but he's not...
He's not going to step out.
Right. He's not really comfortable stepping out to the perimeter. So Michigan took advantage of that and got him a bunch of open looks from three, which he can't. He was 5-9.
Yeah.
So, you know, he's going to be up and down, but he's obviously got the talent on any given day. I mean, I think he's a true 40% three-point shooter talent-wise.
Yep.
He's just got to hit him against freaking Wisconsin.
Or well, anything.
He airballed the first one in this game, too, and then
that's right.
And he was on.
Yeah.
He was just needed to get a rangefinder, I guess. But that, you know, Alex drew the pick and pop up right away.
Yeah.
Because we were all cheering about that play. And it was
this isn't going to work against Wisconsin. And they ran it a couple times against Wisconsin.
Yeah, like, I think Michigan's first offensive possession, he missed a long. He actually took it from way behind the 3-point line.
But it's a weird. 1-4 against Wisconsin because they have their 5 on Michigan's 4.
I know, but that should, if you're going to pick and pop, you want to pick and pop against a center, right? Like, that's the thing that makes the most sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, but if you get him away from the basket, wouldn't you want to go by him or no?
Well, I mean, if you can establish the fact that you're not going to go 0-5 for 3, then he has to close out a
part of the
harder.
I mean, the idea is you can do both because once you're up there, like, wherever he is, he's going to be moving, he's going to be, like, trying to recover. So if he over-recovers, then just go around him.
I have two things that are not related to the Rutgers game, but that need to go in basketball segments.
Okay.
One, I'm a little cheesed off by this fake bracketology exercise that the NCAA undertook that has Gonzaga as a 1 seed instead of Michigan.
Should this have been his first 5 minutes?
No, I'm just going to talk about the bracketology. What are you doing?
I could tell from your tweet on this that you were pretty upset about it.
Well, I don't understand. So the teams have the same record.
Okay.
When they did the exercise, Michigan was 21-2 and Gonzaga was 22-2. Gonzaga has 4 A wins at KenPom. They have 4 B wins at KenPom. Their strength of schedule is like 90th. Michigan has 6 and 5 in those two categories, and their strength of schedule is about 40th. So,
and we both played North Carolina.
Right.
And they got wiped by North Carolina, and we did the opposite.
Right. And
they had to go on the road.
And they have a win over Duke. They have a couple of top-tier wins. They're a very good team. They're ahead of Michigan in KenPom. But that seems to be the only definition, the only way you would actually put them as a one seed over Michigan is if we're valuing the net ranking, if we're valuing just the efficiency margin over like who you played and who you beat.
Right.
And maybe that's the change that they're going to make this year. It's not one that I agree with.
If they're valuing blowouts over teams in the KenPom top 50, I'm fine. I don't want them evaluating blowouts over, like, I don't care what happens against the 200 teams, and that's what they've got on there. Like, Michigan kind of slept through December, and Gonzaga was, like, scoring 100 points on State Farm.
Nobody,
State.
Yeah. Well, I mean, this won't be a problem at the end of the year if they have the same record. Michigan will be ahead of Gonzaga because they'll have, like, wins over Michigan State and Maryland.
Right. I mean, a lot of Michigan's toughest Big Ten matchups are still to come.
But I feel like it's still like you play to win the game, and that's, I mean, Michigan has a better resume than Gonzaga by any estimation, and they should be ahead. Number two.
Okay.
John Crispin, when he does studio shows for Big Ten Network, looks too much like Rivers Cuomo, who is the lead singer of Weezer, because he puts on these glasses, and I'm just like, yes, I would like to destroy your sweater.
Wasn't Rivers going to go to Michigan at one point?
I don't know, but John Crispin...
I think he stopped playing music to come to Michigan.
Has to stop looking so much like Rivers Cuomo. I don't know what, like...
Why does... Okay.
Get some cornrows, stop wearing the glasses, grow a goatee, do whatever you need to do to stop looking like the lead singer of Weezer. This is a personal plea. I'm begging you.
You've established that he has a lookalike, but why is that a negative thing for you?
It's just, I mean, you don't even know who Rivers Cuomo is, do you?
I know, like, maybe one song by Weezer. I don't really.
The positive is now we have an easy song pick for the,
Say It Ain't So, Brian.
So it's something that I've noticed. And
were you a Weezer fan?
I think
everyone of our age was a Weezer fan because, like, they were the thing to be cool about.
I mean, they had a couple good albums, and then, although they have a Christmas album, which I noticed because my wife put, like, she just put all the Christmas music we have on one Christmas playlist, and I was like, Weezer, get rid of this. I don't need to hear Weezer's take on Oh Holy Night. I just don't. That is the most unnecessary thing that's ever existed.
So I would think that you would like it that John Crispin looks like him because it would, like, bring something back for you. It'd be nostalgic.
It's so uncanny that I feel like he might actually be Rivers Cuomo, and it just...
Like they switched?
I mean, it's possible that they're twins, or, like, it's kind of like a Superman situation where it's like Clark Kent. And I don't know which one is Clark Kent and which one's Superman.
I was about to say.
I guess the rock guy has got to be Superman.
I don't know. If you can take Penn State to the NCAA tournament...
All right. So, there we go. Now it's not negative about John Crispin. We said nice things about him, except I need him to grow a goatee.
A goatee?
Yeah. So, we'll see. This is my plea to you, John Crispin.
Are you planning a business trip, a Michigan reunion, or a revenge tour in Ann Arbor and don't want to be stuck out by I-94? Look no further than the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown. Positioned at the corner of Huron and Ashley, the hotel is just a block from Main Street and a short walk to Michigan Stadium and Central Campus with all the amenities you expect. Also, we podcast here most Sunday mornings, so if you let us know you're coming, we'll let you put a shout-out on the pod. That's the Residence Inn, Ann Arbor, downtown.
Hey, this is Seth from MGO Blog. Like many of you by now, when it was time to refinance my house, I talked to Matt Demarest in Homeshore Lending. Since we had bought only a few years earlier, it was amazing how different the experience was between Matt and our bank. He knows his stuff, gives you and your loan his personal attention, and can shop at the different lenders so you're always a priority. We are constantly getting similar feedback from readers who used Homeshore Lending when buying or refinancing a house in Michigan. He knows the mortgage industry well, which becomes a big deal when your loan is as complicated as mine was. If you haven't met him yet, he's tailgating this year with his HemGo bus at the Charity Beer Garden on 327 Hoover. And if you're buying or refinancing, reach out to Homeshore Lending, NMLS number 1161358.
If you get in foul trouble in Ann Arbor or Metro Detroit, you want a Michigan man on your bench. Call former prosecutor and now criminal defense attorney Jonathan Paul, the Michigan Law Grad, at 248-924-9458 or visit his website at michiganlawgrad.com.
In most good movies, there's a hero and a coach. You are the hero, like Luke Skywalker. We are your coach, like Yoda. It's Nick Hopwood from
Peak Wealth Management,
your MGO financial coach. Learn more at peakwm.com/mgoblog. I'm the CFP who coaches people just like you. We both hate going to weddings on Michigan football Saturdays. And just like Luke, most of you need a little bit of coaching and guidance. And to qualify as a coach needs to have empathy and authority. Yoda has empathy because he's been battling the Sith for hundreds of years. We have empathy because we've seen people we care about making terrible financial decisions, putting their retirement at risk. Yoda has authority because he's arguably the most powerful Jedi of all time. We have authority because we have an economics degree from Michigan, we are CFP, we have 20 years in the business, and we manage over $145 million of client assets. And we've seen hundreds of cases. You are the hero, and we are your financial coach. If you're ready for a second opinion about your financial future, check out peakwm.com/amgoblog today.
I don't mind your cursing, talking like you do. Same as I used to when I was young like you. It never really left me talking like I do. Same as I used to when I was young like you. And I don't mind your fussing, fighting like you do. Same as I used to, with fists and words and boots. Throwing monkey punches, clicking piggy boots. Messy monologuing with the tongue I got from you. But talk is talk. Talk is talk is talk.
All right, so we got a coaching staff that seems
set
for now.
They had to process a guy.
They did. Second straight year, someone is like shown the door in slow motion. Tim Drevno, who, oh my God. I'm sorry, but like when Pro Football Focus puts up their like Big Ten pass protection grades.
Yeah. And Alaric Jackson.
And Alaric Jackson is the best pass protecting tackle in the Big Ten.
In fairness, that was all like Big Ten West guys and one guy we thought was good. So they were, that was missing the Big Ten East
that
killers.
That does not matter.
Okay. No, it does.
That does not matter.
I'm not gonna argue.
I understand that the grades are based on like who you're playing, because that's what my grades are based on as well. But
yes,
the top tackle in the Big Ten
in
terms
protection.
Of pass protection is a guy who Michigan was gonna flip from Iowa on signing day.
Just could have just give him an offer sheet
until Timmy didn't send him an LOI.
What was the who did they get instead?
Nobody.
There. Was that planned?
No, but so like this jabron, good luck with him.
Is that our new cheer? Is that our new call return cheer? Who would we get at left tackle?
Well, good luck with that, USC.
there's nobody else that they opted for, whatever, they just ate a scholarship?
They just decided they didn't want him. They took air over him.
I really don't want to go through the list of offensive tackles that Drevno did not get again. Like Mekhi Becton.
So this in this context, I just want to state that there is no way that the Pep Hamilton to Josh Gattis transition is as profitable for Michigan as the Tim Drevno to Warner transition.
How do we have Tim Drevno till 2017?
I had my problems with Pep. I'm watching the stuff and like the run game is not at all connected to the pass game. I'm like, this is crap. But Pep Hamilton is not Tim Drevno. Pep Hamilton is not in the league, and hopefully Josh Gattis is at Warner. But like the improvement here is not going to be as fast.
Pep wasn't a great
quickly.
Pep wasn't a great recruiter either. He was fine. He was in everything. I thought Pep was fine, but I also didn't want to like be jumping on Pep when everyone else was, because he was a total lightning rod. And like,
I just think that the thing that was the issue or the main thing was the process for getting plays in and such. And
I think the nature of the plays as well. So we heard,
sure, but isn't that part of when you
I was told by someone that was not that we were a little off base on that, or like we shouldn't be focusing too much on that because like everyone has a collaborative effort.
I mean, you can talk about it as being weird, but like, if I mean, who's the primary player caller? I don't know.
It was Harbaugh. I think it was Harbaugh, and that's why I'm kind of downplaying the loss of Pep. But Harbaugh giving the reins to Gattis to run an offense that Harbaugh only like dabbled in before,
well,
I think
is
a good thing.
We ran exactly 3 RPOs last year.
Yeah.
I can remember each and every
one. I drew them all up every single time we got one. We were so excited. I did a neck Sharpies on it.
Like, this is a good idea. It's something that plays that we run a lot. We have a quarterback who's very good at RPOs, as he demonstrated at Ole Miss, because that's all they did.
And it played off of our running game. It played off the base running game, which is the passing game did not.
Did we have arc play action? Not really. We had like a couple plays here and there. But
actually, they ran it once against Notre Dame before we had the whole arc read game in, which is pointless. You use the scissors before they knew Eve Ed Rock.
Well, and they had to like change their offense midseason because their approach to spread offense was garbage. And
yeah.
They had Warner, and Warner's like, hey, this is garbage. And Warner's like, well, can you do it better? And Warner was like, yes.
Yeah.
And it turned out that was accurate.
Well, what happens with Warner every single stop is he comes in, he fixes your offensive line, he looks like a genius, he teaches you how to run the spread. And then someone's like, wow, you should just be the offensive coordinator. And then he's
every stop, he was at Ohio State for like a million years.
Well, then he went to Minnesota, right?
For 1 year.
Okay.
And then he was the slow-motion Drevno replacement.
Okay. But,
so Josh Gattis doesn't have a track record. He was the OC, co-OC with Locksley at Alabama last year. And that could mean anything. Right?
Right.
Like, I've got Tua and Jerry Jeudy and Ruggy Bugs and Buggy Rugs and all their other receivers. So it's like, yeah, you guys had a real good offense.
You guys had a great NFL offense.
Remember when Nussmeier had a good offense with those guys, yeah, too.
The more encouraging part of his resume is that the fact that he was the wide receivers coach at Penn State.
Yeah.
When one, they were recruiting wide receivers like Gangbuster, and two, they just had a machine going. You know, Allen Robinson, Chris Godwin, Deshaun Hamilton.
Yep.
Like, they just one after the other. And you can't,
all different types, too.
And I'm going to throw Gesicki in there because that's not a tight end. So, like, so he's obviously a guy who Michigan is very comfortable with as a wide receiver coach. And, boy, he's got some specimens to work with, and that's very encouraging. And then he is absorbing the tau of Joe Moorhead.
Right.
For 3 years. And, like, okay, now we're talking.
And he's a great recruiter.
And he keeps tweeting this, like, speed and space stuff, right?
Right, yeah.
So, and that's kind of what we've wanted to see.
And I believe that he's coming, and he is going to be, like, the real offensive coordinator. Because,
I mean, that's what they said,
right? He had that chance at Maryland, and you got to think that he had that chance at Alabama, right?
Yeah.
Because like, their co-OC is out the door.
Because everybody's out the door.
Everybody's out the door. If he sticks at Alabama, he's going to be, like, the last man standing and the sole OC.
Right.
So is he coming to Michigan for less than that role? No. So I think he's going to, I mean, possible we're going to see Harbaugh rest it back, but this is going to be one of the most interesting spring games in a while because run and how they run it and how fast they run it is going to be.
And because, like, the offense, they finally return, like, everyone other than, you know, Higdon or, I guess, Gentry, but.
Possibly like, Evans.
Well, yeah, but, I mean, now you're going to have, like, a passing game that has been together for a year plus.
Yeah.
And you, like you said, now you have chances to put in some of this stuff that they've started with last year. They just didn't run it a ton of it.
So, yeah. I mean, it's one of those things where hopefully we actually see Michigan kind of move away from the Stanford ball, which is effective in its context. But if you look at the personnel machine it's going to be fielding next year.
And that's the king. That's the thing. Is it's not like, okay, I'm anti the tight ends or running the ball in with from Jumbo. It's just that when you have NFL wide receivers, it's probably a good idea to throw them the ball.
Right. And I mean, I like this should be a team that is a pass first team next year. You have a senior quarterback. You have, I think, 3 receivers are going to play in the NFL. I mean, you've got a couple of, you got Oliver Martin in addition. I mean, like, you've got some guys. And, you know, there's really no reason to not be a pass first team.
They don't have a running back who can pass block, which is the last
True
piece
Wilson. What are you talking about? True Wilson is a fantastic pass blocker.
There you go. True Wilson. Should we talk about Evans?
Well, I mean, he had some academic issues as he tweeted out.
He said
he's going to try to get back on the team. It doesn't appear to be the team's
call.
So He seems like a really good guy. I just think that it's to get this far down the road to permanently ban it off the team is like kind of a Hail Mary to expect him to get back. But he's not transferring. That would be the easy thing to do.
Right. So if he isn't, so what does that say about like guys that are coming in? Like Giles Jackson is kind of sort of like an Evans, right? Where he's a bit of a slot receiver.
He was exclusively a slot his senior year.
Okay.
So he played some running back as a junior, but he was exclusively a slot.
But they could use him in Evans-like fashion?
Well, they ever actually used Evans in an Evans-like fashion.
Well, but they did. I mean, the 2017 Ohio State game was him kind of putting him in space, and you're kind of like, this is what we want to see. So could you bring in a true freshman who looks the part to be able to do something
you
like that?
You could also run that. A lot of his that game you could run with receivers as well. I think McDoom.
Jackson is going to be like a Paris Campbell kind of guy. Like, he's not really running back, but you might get him the ball a few times on end arounds and whatnot.
Or, like, flares.
Sure, yeah.
But or like, screens. I mean, things like
but
that.
It's limited when you start talking about him a running back because you're going to leave him in to pass protect.
Yeah. Never.
No, the Paris Campbell thing is a good example.
So he's like a spread H.
Okay.
Yeah, and then you can run two back sets, but you need another guy in there too.
So, I mean, I think True Wilson is going to be the guy who you're going to have on passing downs. And Charbonnet obviously has the heft. Like, he's not going to be a guy who gets run over by a linebacker, but how fast can he pick it up?
And how fast can he pick up pass protection?
That's what I mean.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I mean, just the offense in general when you're talking about a freshman, but then, like, blitz pickups are, I mean, we've seen Michigan struggle with that.
Yeah, I mean, but that's kind of like points towards like what is offense going to be next year? Is it going to be like, let's have 75 long developing pass plays, or are we going to get it out quick most of the time? And I think, you know, getting out quick can be like what Notre Dame was doing against us.
Yeah.
It's like,
well, getting out quick is basically a run game.
Getting out quick can be a 30-yard fade, right? Because the fade's in the air forever.
Yeah. Yep.
So like, you know, you can attack deep without having to hold the ball forever. And you want to take your shot sometimes on those post routes and the stuff that take a long time to develop. But I think just get it in space to your playmakers and have some tempo, like mid game tempo. I don't want to see like, you know, Indiana, well, previous version, Chaos Team Indiana. But like having that in your back pocket is just a really good thing to do because
Or being able to do it at all.
Right. And one, it disrupts the defense, and two, like what happens if you have a 2-minute drill?
What if you're not winning the game? Yeah.
And then Ben McDaniels is the quarterback coach. I don't know anything about him, what to think about him.
He was a quarterback.
He was a quarterback.
He's been a quarterback's coach before. I like him better at quarterback coach than receiver coach.
I mean, to me, like, if Michigan has a quarterback coach and a offensive coordinator, are we seeing the demise of Jim Harbaugh as offensive guru? Is he now just the CEO? That might be fine.
He's going to be involved in the offense, obviously.
I'm sure that he is, but like is.
But also, he was a lot of fun when he was going around doing all sorts of, you know, extra football things, and maybe he'll be able to do some of that. Maybe we'll get to see him tweak the nose of some SEC guys a little bit more.
So he's now freed to get back on Twitter.
Yeah.
Oh joy. So you want to talk about the AAF?
Well, okay. So I watched a little bit of the game yesterday, Dirt, while I was also watching the hockey game. But did you look at any of the rules? I posted in the Slack chat.
I saw that there's a sky judge. I like that. Like I like things that I think I can like hear Sylvester Stallone saying, "I am the law." I didn't do that right because I don't have a Sylvester Stallone impression. But like, I am the law.
I'm not trying it.
I am the law.
I am the law.
That's much better. That's good.
That was actually good.
That was good.
Anyway, so there are no kickoffs.
So what Seth did is he just got his tongue out and was like, wow, that's better.
You got to twist your mouth.
You got to get your tongue involved and just...
Come on, David, let's see your slow.
Go for it.
I'd like to talk about football. Oh, we can cut that.
Anyway, this AAF.
So there's no kickoffs.
Okay. So I already hate it. My kickoffs are the best part of a football game.
Okay. So... But the problem with no kickoffs is then what do you do for onsides?
You flip the coin?
No.
Rock, paper, scissors?
Third and...
I mean, we don't have to talk about this.
Third and 25. Or third and 15 or something.
Fourth and 12 on your 28.
Right.
Yeah.
But is that not interesting?
I guess.
I mean, isn't that kind of, wouldn't you rather see that than an onside kick?
It is
kick?
Football. It is at least the game of football.
But if just picture it any time when you want to get the ball back. Now, they have
if you're going to get rid of kickoffs, I'd rather have that.
I mean, so like, I'm into college football because I have a precisely calibrated level of love and hate for every single team. So when someone plays another someone, I know who I'm rooting for. I don't have that in the AFE.
But you're not listening to what I'm saying.
What are you saying?
I'm saying that I don't really know a ton about these teams either, obviously, because some of them haven't even played a game yet.
Sure, that's a good point.
But the interesting thing is they're implementing some rules that we kind of have talked about or have dreamed about or right. have like joked about. And so now you get to actually see what happens with some of them. Like, yeah. like for example, you complain about commercials at the beginning of every podcast. Well, there are no commercial breaks. Or there's very, very, very few. And when they are, they're like those half screens that you like so much.
Half screens are good.
Right. Yeah. So now you see the huddle. And as soon as like they all get to the line, they zoom back in and you see the play again.
Those are interesting in context of like, will college football adopt some of them?
I mean, like, I honestly, like, I get more football than I want in 4 months. I'm just like football does not. I don't feel good about football.
I mean, part of the thing with the AF is they put teams in the South, and like you're supposed to be able to draft only guys who are in your area. So like, it's a continuation of college football to a degree. It's just not in our region of college football.
Well,
they also have like a live app that you can watch each game, and they track every player.
That would be very useful if Michigan would give me that.
Well, in any case. I have bad feelings about football because I've watched Michigan lose yes. to Ohio State every single year
and I'm
since I was born.
And
so I don't want to watch more football. I don't care.
Do you want to engage in a discussion with me about some of these things?
Okay.
They have Denard.
Yeah, even that is kind of like, do I want to see like
the sad Denard?
Is he playing quarterback?
No.
No.
No, then.
And he's 30 and he looks 30 and a lot more NFL now.
Eighth.
I'm just saying that I thought a couple of the rules could be interesting. It might be worth watching for a few weeks to see how they work out and right. to see if, hey, this actually is a really good idea. Because if you remember in the XFL, the one thing to come out of that was the fact that they use Skycam.
The XFL, like, they're going to happen too.
I can't believe that's coming back.
They got... Wait, you're getting frustrated with me.
I'm getting frustrated because I'm trying to have a conversation and you're like going off in like seven different directions.
Well, you brought up the XFL. They have Bob Stoops. Do you think, like, Ohio State might have given him a call?
Do you think he wanted to go to Ohio State?
Like, hey, Bob Stoops. I mean, if you're an Ohio State fan, you're staring at Ryan Day, and you're like, this guy could work out. And then the XFL, like, 2 months later is like, guess who we got? I mean.
Maybe he wanted to stay in Texas or Oklahoma.
I wonder how much the coaches are supposed to work, because they don't have to do any recruiting. They don't have to. It's got to be a lot easier job than any staff position on college football. Like, if you're rooting for Urban Meyer,
We're just going to keep that.
You're
working for Urban Meyer.
All right. Before the segment ends, what do you want to communicate to our listeners?
Just a lone voice.
Just let him go.
Character voices!
Shut up. He's about to kick our asses. Come on.
I just think some of these things are very interesting, and you don't know how something is going to play out when you talk about it.
Yeah.
But when you can actually see it implemented and watch it over a larger enough sample size, you can sit there and say, hey, this might actually be a good idea to implement into another league. And the NFL or college football or whoever could run with something like that, and then all of a sudden you could see a game that we enjoy or a league we enjoy be improved. And okay. I think that this is like a good test tube to kind of watch that.
All right, so if you're interested in that, then watch the AFE.
We have a lot in common. You rode the bus to Bursley, so did Larry Page, and so did I. And we all love MGO Blog. I'm Nick Hopwood, your MGO financial coach. My entire family went to Michigan State, but I was the smart one finding my way to Ann Arbor to study econ. I've been a financial planner for 17 years, earning the designation Certified Financial Planner, and founded Peak Wealth Management in Plymouth. Oh, you're pretty smart, and you probably have a sweet retirement spreadsheet already. My job is to make sure. As a financial coach, I make sure you're on track, or if you're not on track, I tell you exactly what you're going to need to do And if you listen, I'll be able to tell you how your future should look, just like the knowledge. And I have cool charts and graphs to tell the story, sort of like the Mathlete. To learn more or schedule time to chat, check out peakwm.com/mgoblog.
Want the perfect game day outfit? Underground Printing has unique, great-fitting UM apparel and officially licensed apparel from legendary Michigan names like Woodson, Howard, Schembechler, Ufer, and more. UGP also specializes in custom-printed apparel and promotional items for groups, events, and businesses. Whether you need one shirt as a gift or 1,000 shirts for a charity walk, Underground can customize almost anything for groups large or small. To learn more, visit Underground Printing at one of our three convenient locations around Ann Arbor or online at undergroundshirts.com.
In southeastern Michigan, the yearly cost for a nursing home averages $90,000. It doesn't have to, though. Reed McCarthy founded Ann Arbor Elder Law after handling a tricky situation for his own family. Years of experience later, his boutique firm works with clients across southeast Michigan dealing with Medicaid planning, long-term care, and tax, disability, and family law, not to mention family dynamics. If you have a family member who may need that level of care, or if you're ready to start your own estate plan, Reed can give you a plan for the future. Visit AnnArborElderLaw.com or call 734-945-9693. That's 734-945-9693.
The places you'll go may seem far from Ann Arbor. From San Francisco to St. Louis to Shanghai. But as members of the Alumni Association, we're never far. Because Michigan is more than a place. It's a mindset that connects us. For those who leave Michigan, but for whom Michigan never leaves, this is where you belong. The Alumni Association of the University of Michigan. Join today at umalumni.com.
Are you planning a business trip, a Michigan reunion, or a revenge tour in Ann Arbor and don't want to be stuck out by I-94? Look no further than the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown. Positioned at the corner of Huron and Ashley, the hotel is just a block from Main Street and a short walk to Michigan Stadium and Central Campus with all the amenities you expect. Also, we podcast here most Sunday mornings, so if you let us know you're coming, we'll let you put a shout-out on the pod. That's the Residence Inn, Ann Arbor, downtown.
For a white guy. Uno, dos, tres, cuatro, cinco, cinco, seis.
You know it's kind of hard just to get along today. Our subject isn't cool, but he fakes it anyway. He may not have a clue and he may not have style, but everything he lacks, well, he makes up in denial. So don't debate.
All right, one final segment. We're going to touch briefly on some things that a lot of people feel are peripheral. One is Michigan hockey, which got its first sweep since the Treaty of Versailles over the weekend by sweeping Michigan State. So hooray, sweeping Michigan State. But, I mean, if they win out in the regular season, there's a chance that they might be in an at-large berth spot.
That would include knocking off Notre Dame.
Yeah, I mean, they have...
Notre Dame's also 2-4-2 in their last eight games.
Right, like, I think they have a Ohio State series is the bigger problem.
Oh, yeah.
But Ohio, who Michigan played is close to 50-50.
I know, but
better.
They're like 11-3 in the league. They're only team is like the only team that's better than 500 in the Big Ten. It's a weird...
Yes.
It's a weird...
But league. It's also at Yost, where Michigan has played.
I know, but like... So
they're also owned football against Ohio State lately.
If they win out, they might be... in the 12 spot or the 13 spot or the 14 spot.
Right.
But they also might be still out of the tournament.
So I mean, it's possible, but the schedule has worked out for them nicely that they have wins that they can move up when because they go to Notre Dame.
Yeah, but so there's a site called College Hockey Rank that does like a bunch of projections of the season. And it's like if Michigan does not win every single one of their games, they will not be in an at-large spot.
Is that including anything in the Big Ten tournament?
That does not include the Big Ten tournament. So, like, if they were to win another couple games in the Big Ten tournament, that might push them into an at-large spot. But, you know, realistically, we're looking at a team that has to win the Big Ten tournament to make the tournament.
So, going into that, then, they are sitting in second right now on points per game, which is big because they can then not have to leave Yost potentially until the final.
Okay.
Because not only will they get to play worse teams like a Michigan State or a Wisconsin potentially in the opening round, but then they would also host the semifinal, which is just a one game. And if you remember last year, they had to go to Columbus, played a very good game, lost in overtime. So that this year, that game would potentially be at Yost. And winning that game then would propel them even further. And again, not having to go to leave home. And then now all of a sudden you're in the Big Ten final, potentially. Yeah. And it's a win against a team that might be in or around the tournament. So you have a lot of home games potentially there after this Notre Dame game. And the only two road games that you would have then would be at Wisconsin, who's currently, like, I think, 6th or 7th. And has kind of fallen down. They're below 30th in paralyzed.
Like, I mean, what about this team has given you the indication that they're capable of running off, what, like 8 wins in 9 games?
Well, no. I mean, that's a good point. But if you look at like how they've played, they've actually haven't played terribly. There have been some holes in their games, and they've lost like that Penn State game because they just gave away a ton of odd man rushes, or they couldn't score a power play goal against Minnesota. But they've also played really well in a bunch of the other games, including against Notre Dame the last time they were there.
Yeah, but I mean, it's a 500 team, and they could catch fire.
Or they just lose half of them, and then, you know,
or tie the rest of the season.
But see, they haven't had a tie since, like, December.
Yeah, they've just decided.
Now they're just splitting every series.
Yeah, they're just splitting every series.
Except for last one. We finally won. When's the last series they won before this one?
They swept St. Lawrence in October.
Really? My God.
Oh, my God.
But you wanted to talk about some USA soccer. So we should transition into that.
I did. So Greg Berhalter had his first two games after Camp Cupcake. And obviously, you know, they're playing B teams for Panama and Costa Rica, so you don't want to read too much into it. But I've been consuming all of the available media, and the really encouraging thing about Greg Berhalter to me is how much he reminds me of John Beilein. So,
okay, that's a connection.
I mean, they have these like kind of behind the scenes videos, and Berhalter's talking.
He says fudge.
He's the kind of guy who might say fudge. Yeah, He's not a fiery speech giver. He's monotone. He's very, very even keel. But the things he says to these guys are detailed. And, you know, I'm watching them play Panama, and they cut to the sideline, and he's talking to everybody on the bench about things that he's seeing and what he wants from the players out there in a manner that reminds me a lot of John Beilein. So when you cut to John Beilein on the bench, he's always like talking to Livers or whoever there, or Castleton or wherever, about like what this mistake has been and what how you fix that. And then you see the two games where the U.S. comes out in a strange formation that he actually stole from Manchester City, where the outside back tucks inside when you've got the ball to kind of create this box in the midfield. I don't know if that's going to be what he does going forward. It's not what he did at Columbus, but in any case, you're going to have a back three by hook or by crook, and then everybody else kind of has the freedom to go forward. But what I liked about that is, so they show this in the Panama game, do well, and they win that game. And then the first half against Costa Rica presses. And they press in a manner specifically designed to go after the formation that they saw. And this works pretty well in the first half, and part of that is the fact that we're talking about the USB team. Like, you don't have a lot of guys out there who would normally be out there who might have the skill to break the press. But in the second half, they push the wings up really far. They drop the central midfield a little bit, and then they just start pinging long balls to the corners, which is what Berhalter has done in MLS when he plays like New York Red Bulls, who press all the time and all that stuff. And as a result, the U.S. gets chance after chance after chance in the second half, and they hit two posts. They finally break through with a couple of goals, and they come up with a solid win against Costa Rica. And the pattern there is not something I've seen from the U.S. in a very long time, where, you know, they're kind of struggling in the first half. They get into the locker room, they make some adjustments, and bam, it's a totally different game. So I was in favor of the Berhalter hire just because I felt like a guy who took one of the lower payrolls in MLS and consistently overachieved with it, a guy who had a very specific detailed system he wanted to impart, a guy who could take basically any MLS forward and put him up for 15 goals a season, seemed like a good fit for what the U.S. needed. They needed someone to give them their backbone back, to give them a system that they could consistently learn over the course of a 3 or 4 year period, and who could deal with the fact that the forward pool is thin for now. So good start. And we'll see what the first team does in the March friendlies. That'll be interesting because they will not have had the luxury of a month worth of camp before they play these games. So it'll be interesting to see who comes in fresh from overseas and who actually is a holdover.
So that'll be more the A team?
Yes, the March friendlies are a FIFA date, so that'll be like the full A team.
And who do they play then?
They have Chile and some other South American team. So some pretty legit opponents.
Oh, Ecuador.
Ecuador, that's right. So yeah, it'll be a test. And honestly, I'm not expecting it to go that well because you're going to put like, you know, Pulisic out there and you're going to put, I don't know, maybe Josie out there, and those guys weren't at this camp. So it's going to be interesting. But the thing is, under Sarachin, I watched the games, but I couldn't tell you anything about them because it was worthless.
Right.
Like, he's going to roll out a 1-4-1, a 1-4-1-4, or 4-1-4-1, whatever.
1-3-1, that's what it would be.
A 4-1-1-4.
4-3.
Four numbers, whatever. He's going to roll out this Nickel. Stupid, thoughtless formation and act like a babysitter and just kind of not do anything, and you're not going to learn anything. But these were actually compelling and they were interesting to watch. And I'm interested to see how the U.S. does with the full guys. Also, who the full guys are now are increasingly interesting because you've got this generation of guys coming up over the next few years where the Bundesliga is now just filled with American kids.
So. I was about to say it's the generation or the A team is probably getting a lot younger.
Absolutely. So it looks like Michigan. I do this all the time. It looks like the U.S. is in for a much better talent generation. I don't want to call it a golden generation just yet, but if a couple things break right, I mean, you have the most expensive player in U.S. history in Pulisic. You have Tim Weah, who's banging in goals for Celtic now, and you've got Adams in the Bundesliga. You have McKenney in the Bundesliga. There's going to be
Sargent's there.
He's breaking through. You're going to have probably a starting 11 that you could make out of high-end Bundesliga players with the occasional MLS fill-in, and that was definitely not the case over the past cycle.
Which will kind of be interesting considering Berhalter came through the MLS.
Yeah, well, so I don't think that, you know, the whole, like, Klinsmann thing where it's like, oh, you got to challenge yourself overseas and MLS is garbage, and like, that's stupid. Like, the all-time best USA player was Landon Donovan, who was overseas briefly and then bailed because he had mental issues and didn't want to deal with it. Okay, fine. Did that impact his U.S. career negatively? Not really. Clint Dempsey? Not really. So it's about the quality of the player, and if MLS is going to buy DPs with a lot of money to keep them in the league because it's worth it, I don't think that makes them a lot worse. Like, I think that the reason the people talk about Josie and Bradley as the examples of this because they both went to Toronto because Toronto gave them big deals. But, I mean, at the same time, they were criticizing those guys for coming back to MLS. Giovinco comes from Italy. He gets Italy call-ups from Toronto. Like,
I mean, that's impressive. But he also did really well.
He did, but like, so did Josie and so did Bradley. The reason that Josie and Bradley looked bad for the U.S. is because there was never a plan, and there was never anyone there to cover for Bradley's, you know, kind of aging legs and the fact that he can't cover as much ground as he did when he was 21. So he looks terrible because he was put in positions where anyone looked terrible. Because all Klinsmann ever did was clap and go faster.
So
he's a joke.
So Berhalter has the chance to be the best U.S. coach since
Bradley. I mean, Bradley is a legit coach. Like, you know, he almost gets Egypt in the World Cup before Mo Salah. He had a good run in Sweden before then. He comes back to LAFC and they're pretty good. And he's, I think, in the same vein of, like, they're both bald, they're not very emotional, but they're tactical,
okay,
and they're disciplined, and they understand stuff. Like, there were points under Bob Bradley where the U.S. was playing toe-to-toe with a lot of really good teams. And then, you know, I don't think that Bob Bradley ever had the level of talent that Berhalter is likely to in 3 years, because the wave of guys who are coming through and will be 21, 22, and likely some of the, there's going to be enough guys who push through that he's going to have his pick of, you know, first 11 starters in the major league across the pond, which has never happened. So good times. For the first time in literally 2 years, I feel good about USA Soccer.
And we have a relevant tournament this summer.
Yeah, we do. Two. It's actually the U20 World Cup, which is going to be really interesting because they got some dudes.
Everybody's under 20?
Well, I mean, like, you know, Pulisic's not going to go to the U20 World Cup, but, like, there are a number of guys who will, who are going to be on the verge of breaking through. So, good times.
Play the drums.
Thank you for listening to the MGO podcast. I'm David Nasternak, along with Brian Cook and Seth Fisher. We talk about so many different sports, and Brian calls them all Michigan.
Better than us!
Nobody!
Well done.
What?
We made it through the whole segment.
What segment?
We had a bet to see if we could do something.
Do what?